My name is Barbara Coleman Foster, and we're here to capture oral history of Mr. Turner Clayton. I know people mix that up because
they
associate Turner with the last name. So I'm going to ask you to give your name and then go ahead and tell your story. Now, my job is just to listen. As much as I'll try not to interject, I might do so, but really I'm just here to listen and have you give you space to tell your story.
Okay, my name is Turner Clayton. I was raised here in the city of Sanford, the historic Goldsboro area. Went to school here, graduated from Goldsboro Elementary School, moved over to Crooms, graduated from Crooms High School, and went on to college for a little while, stopped, and got involved in the community. And, of course, starting out, what really caught my interest living here in the city of Sanford, I never forget, we had segregation, especially in the grocery stores. I remember going to the Food Fair supermarket with my mother, shop one day for groceries, and I just happened to see these two fountains in the back of the store, and they had signs on them, one saying colored, the other said white. And, of course, me being a kid, I was probably about 6, 7 years old during that time, and never even seen white water or colored water. So I decided to drink from the white fountain to see what that water was like. And the manager called me, and he said, boy, you ain't supposed to be drinking from that fountain. You supposed to be drinking from the black folks' fountain, the color fountain. And the color fountain was one of those old, rusted-out fountains. The white fountain was a new, cool fountain. And, of course, that particular story stuck with me the rest of my life, even to today. I never forget it. I think about that sometime when I'm at home on how I was raised here in the city of Sanford. And then, of course, growing up, that got me involved in civil rights. I spent 27 years involved with civil rights here in the city of Sanford, president of the Seminole County branch, involved in a lot of stories here with Crooms High School and also at the Trayvon Martin. Well, starting with Crooms, you know, I was the last class to actually graduate from Crooms before they shut it down. They tried to force my class to go to Seminole during that particular year, but we fought against it, and the parents fought against it, and we was able to graduate from Crooms that year, and then they closed it down. And it stayed closed down for a while until they reopened it back up as a ninth grade center. And, of course, once they reopened it back up as a ninth grade center, then it was opened for both black and white students to attend. But the white parents didn't want their kids to go to Crooms. So eventually, Crooms burned down through the night, mysteriously. And, of course, it was rebuilt into a different Crooms back during that time. And then, of course, they started adding a grade each year, because the Justice Department told me they had to make it a high school again. So they started out with the ninth grade. Then the next year they had to go to 10th grade until they got back to 12th grade. And of course, once that process was done, and of course, before they actually opened back up, and back up a little bit, they kept a principal and a custodian at Crooms the whole year the school would close down, because the Justice Department told them they could not close the school down permanently. So in order to keep it open, they put the principal and the custodian there, which would give them the right to say, well, the school is still open. Okay, and moving on, years later, they closed Crooms again and said, okay, we'll reopen it as an elementary school. And this was Dr. Haggerty during that time from the school board. And I said, Dr. Haggerty, that's an insult to the black community, because Croom had produced lawyers, doctors, federal judges, and a whole lot of other famous people. And we cannot let that legacy die. So Croom's has to be a high school. He says, no way possible, because the land is not large enough to accommodate a high school. So that's when we filed a lawsuit with the Justice Department, and they got involved with it, and told the school board that they had to rebuild Crooms into a high school. And so that's why Crooms were rebuilt into a high school. And then, of course, later on down the line, I got involved with the Trayvon Martin case after Trayvon was killed here in the city of Sanford by a so-called, what do you call him, neighborhood watch person. And he took it upon himself, after being told not to follow Trayvon, follow him, and eventually wind up getting into an altercation with Trayvon and actually killing Trayvon. And, of course, during that time, the father, he called me about the situation. And, of course, he was crying on the phone when I was talking with him about him, his son and his wife, who was supposed to have been coming to be with him also. So we worked on that case. The case received nationwide attention. As a matter of fact, it received international attention because we even got calls from England, and we got calls from Venezuela also about this particular case. They wanted to know how the city of Sample was dealing with the racial discrimination process based on Trayvon Martin. And, of course, we finally was able to get some type of closure for the family, even though the verdict wasn't what it was supposed to be. The governor during that time, Rich Scott, appointed a special prosecutor, which was told, and this is through information that I received through some of the Florida legislators, that the special prosecutor was told to present this case in the black community and to bring it forth and bring charges against George Zimmerman to actually satisfy the black community. And, of course, she did that. We knew that in the end that George Zimmerman was not going to be found guilty based on the circumstances and based on the information that I received from somebody, a Florida legislator, who informed me what was taking place. So that case was resolved. Currently, I'm the chairman of the Goldsboro Front Porch, and, of course, during my chairmanship, we have done a lot in the black community. We've actually built houses on 18th Street off of Persimmon Avenue. Yeah, 18th Street off Persimmon. There was about three houses that we built back there during that particular time. We've also assisted the elderly in the community by having air conditioning installed in their houses. We've also had new windows placed in their houses. We've done a lot of upgrade in the black community in order to try to assist our elderly. We've also provided grooming techniques for the elderly as well as for men and female. So there's a lot of things we're doing in the community. In fact, we're doing some of that now. So it's going back. I'm going to go back to the year when we was told as kids growing up that we could not swim downtown in the swimming pool. We had a swimming pool over at Goldsboro, which is for black kids. There was another swimming pool downtown on the lakefront, which was for the white kids. When the white kids decided they wanted to come visit our pool, we decided to pay homage and visit their pool also. And once the city found out that we were actually going downtown, getting in the swimming pool, they decided they would close up both pools. They fill Goldsboro pool in full of dirt, and, of course, it's still covered today. The same thing downtown. They covered that particular pool up also and built a basketball court just so that we couldn't swim in the pool downtown. So these are the kind of situation that I grew up in here in the city of Sanford. And things are beginning to change, but as we take one step forward, it's always two step backwards.
Thank you for sharing. Just a couple of follow-up questions. As you talk about the pool in Goldsboro, where was that pool located?
It was located behind Goldsboro Elementary School, which was almost on the corner of what they call Railroad Avenue during that time, but that has changed. It's a path now.
And as you consider all of what's transpired in the city, is there, you mentioned several major events, but is there one where you felt was truly a turning point for the city?
For the city of Sanford?
Well, let's focus on Goldsboro. Was there one particularly related to Goldsboro? I mean, you could speak to either, but yes.
Well, for Goldsboro, it was during the time when Croon was actually rebuilt, because the community never thought Croon would be reopened again into what it is today.
And I understand that there is a great sense of pride attached to Croon's. And you've mentioned, as well as we had another guest who mentioned, that your class was the last class before it went through the cycle of integration and all of these other changes. What was that like, attending class in the community?
Yes, my class was the last historic class to actually graduate from Croom's High School in 1970. After 1970, they closed it down. They tried to close it down prior to 1970, which was in the middle of our school year. But the parents and the students fought against that. So we were able to finish up at Croom's and graduate. And then they closed it down and just left a principal and a janitor there.
So when it reopened, did it have the name that it has now, or has it gone through several name changes?
Well, it went to Croom's High. They changed the name from Croom's High to Croom's Junior High School. And of course, that was a ninth grade center. And that was the time that the school actually burned down mysteriously through the night. And so they had to rebuild Croom's brick and mortar. And then, of course, it changed to Croom's High School. And then, of course, as we began to fight with the school board about equality within the school system, the name eventually changed after Croom's was actually rebuilt in what it is today, which is Croom Information of Technology, and which is one of the national recognized schools in the nations now.
Well, thank you, Mr. Clayton. Appreciate you taking time to share your stories with us today. And as I said, they will be transcribed, actually placed into the museum archives, and then we'll utilize them to contribute to designing and developing the commemorative quilt, as well as making some of the snippets of the recordings available for people to hear when they come and learn about the quilt and how it was developed. So thank you.
All right, thank you.